Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to The Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
Hey, welcome to the Drive Through Podcast, everybody. Blah, blah, blah. Remember all the people to support to be a part of the show. Don't forget that opioid saga. That's going to be a multi-part series you want to check out. The ultimate story, how we got to this mess that we're in, taking it all the way back to the Neanderthals. Don't forget the Swinging Sounds, also Volume 1, 2, and 3, and now the Sklar Brothers. Gentlemen, welcome.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good to be here.
What a treat to be here.
Thank you for having
now,
us.
Now, Randy Jason, of course, but why not call it shit talk?
So that's a great thing. So you're talking about our documentary that you very generously donated your time to.
Which I recommend that just if you want to, the trailer is so good.
Yeah.
I think it sells it. So
yeah.
If you want to go see this, watch the trailer. You just get it online anyway.
Yeah, it's
right?
Online. If you look up Poop Talk, it was called Poop Talk. Look, I mean, we as creative dudes ourselves, we wanted to call it either Talking Shit,
Fecal Matters.
Fecal Matters. Come on.
Now that we're up against the Black Panther, we want to call it the Brown Panther.
We could have called it The Shape of Toilet Water. Well, we could have called it Lady Turd. I mean, we're looking at Oscar.
No. You need to have like subtitles.
Subtitles. So when it came down to it, what we realized is we had a movie that wasn't so scatologically graphic, if you will. It was really a movie about why is this a difficult something that everybody does, but it's a difficult thing for people to talk about. Right. It was much more about how people wrestle with an issue that's tough to talk about. So it was less about like your crazy, disgusting shit stories. It was
not Aristocrats.
No.
Yeah.
Although there are some amazing stories.
I'm aware of that.
Some amazing stories.
More about why does this bother us so much?
How did we get to this place and should we be talking about it more?
Maybe we're doing it right. We don't know. And we just kind of, what we were realizing is people's approach to this thing was kind of a portal into their human.
You said portal.
Portal. Well, I mean, like, look, we sat down. So ultimately, Poop Talk tended to be like, all right, this is a movie that could reach a lot of people.
Maybe let's specify the name. What it is, 50 actors and comedians interviewing about pooping and shitting.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it. Shit stories.
As well as doctors and scientists and other folks.
It's premiering Friday, February 16th. It's in theaters and video on demand. You can probably the – is supersklars.com have the trailer?
Yeah, and the trailer will be at –
if you go to poop – if you look Poop Talk on YouTube, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Poop Talk
on YouTube. Just Gmail. I mean, Google.
And you'll find the trailer.
Came right up, right.
You'll find the trailer, and it's kind of a –
I think your daughter coined the phrase of the title.
Yeah, so I'm taught – so when we were being interviewed –
on the phone, it's in the trailer. She said, "Are you done with your poop talk?" And then we're like, "Maybe that should be the name of the movie."
Oh.
So it was organic. It came out of the thing.
Is that in the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
good.
In the middle of us being interviewed, I got a phone call. It was my daughter, and I asked her on the phone, "Did you poop today?" And she's like, "Ugh, God, Dad," which is weird because they're the most
public.
Yeah, they're cojones of
kids.
Like my daughter will go on a plane and poop and not flush, which I'm like, that in some countries is seen as a threat.
That's an act of aggression.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that started World War I. Someone took a shit in Archduke Ferdinand's toilet and left it there.
I think you took a shit, bought a sandwich, and then walked out and then shot the guy.
And then shot the guy.
That's right.
But
kids are pretty cool.
But it is interesting, isn't it, that there's some development. I don't know if you get into this in the movie or not, but some developmental aspect to it, which you're not born ashamed of it, but it kind of kicks in without a lot of social overtones, and then the social overtones take it all the way home.
So my oldest daughter is 12 and my youngest is 10. They still are okay with like pooping with the door open in my house having a conversation while we're, it still is very, I kind of want to hold on to this as long as I can because.
The great thing, in 3 years from now, they're going to love that you talked about this.
Oh, yes. They're going to Google it and love that. But
they're going to be so happy. So
they're
No, not that you did this film, but you had talked about this
conversation
here today. Yes.
Well, here's the deal. In 3 years, they're not going to hear anything from me, so who cares?
It goes without
right?
saying.
Who cares? You know, you've been through it, so who cares? Mm-hmm. But it
you
is.
You have daughters, at least.
Yeah, I know.
Fits a little better for the
yes,
dad.
Yes, I have a daughter. I have a son and
mom
and a
will
daughter.
Eat poop.
Yeah, mom's going to have a rough ride. Have a rough go of it. But you know, as long as they don't direct the anger towards me, I'm fine. No, but it was fascinating to do. You know, it's so funny. We did an interview with because we grew up or spent 5 years in New York in our sort of in our developmental professional life, 94 to 99, and right when New York One kind of blasted out and became its own sort of news thing. And when we were just back there, we did Dr. Oz's show, and then we did New York One while we were there. And the woman who's the kind of the main reporter there, Roma Torre, she tweeted out to us, you know, hey, if we actually started talking about poop a little bit more, maybe people would not be so weird about getting screened for colon cancer and stuff. Like if we removed the taboo.
Yeah.
And then we started.
That's more about the asshole than poop, though.
It is
true,
but, like,
but
let's
it's all
get
the same area. I mean,
no, but I mean, the having approached many yes, an asshole
sure.
Filled with poop,
sure, yeah.
It's messing with the asshole. The poop, they don't really care about it because you're going after to get the poop, by the
yeah,
way,
many right.
times.
Yes.
It's the asshole that they yeah. object to. So.
Sure.
But maybe you're right. Maybe we'll reduce it. I like her. I like the way she's thinking.
I like the way she – and then we started thinking
– it could lead to many asshole conversations.
Right?
Although it definitely leads to discussions and also like why America is fighting the bidet. As
that's kind of what we found
thing.
Out.
Yeah,
sure. We found out through it? The show, like, why are we fighting it so
well,
much?
Well, all I remember.
Is it a waste of water?
Well, no, you're not going to find Mr. Carolla fighting the bidets. Did you
no.
JCS?
That man loves.
Yes, we did.
He's in the film and he talked about his toilet seat.
He talked about the fact that he goes on the road with his toilet seat under his arm and takes
it
to hotels.
Did he tell you the first time he encountered said a Japanese instrument?
No.
We were at the London. It was not the London then.
He talks about it and Rob Corddry talk about it in terms that like
they're talking about their children.
Well, I want
more
you to know I was there.
Children.
I was there and he called me and insisted I come down and see.
See it and
feel the heat
yeah.
and mm-hmm. look at the power
the stream,
of the jet,
yes,
stream
the
out
the
of the
undulation.
Toilet. Yes, he. Mm-hmm. I mean, he waxed poetic for about
it's a treat.
What's today? About 16 years after
okay.
that,
it is. And to this day, he can tell you how great it felt the very first time.
Yeah. So he now, to be fair, the issue with Mr. Carolla is, as he has described to me, cleaning the poop for him is like trying to get peanut butter out of shag carpet.
Yeah.
And so the bidet will take care of all
sure.
that.
Sure.
Someone in the movie said, if you had a piece of poop on your arm, would you take a dry towel and
right.
wipe it off?
No, you
would get soap and water and clean it off.
Well,
so why wouldn't you do that?
But what has suddenly come in, though, are these like little chucks, the wipes. Yeah,
The moist wipes have now
that been, has come so in.
Maybe that is the little baby step towards the bidet. Because in every other, in many, all European cultures, it exists. In Japan, it exists. And many, many, many people use it.
There will never be a bidet. There could be the toilet seat adaptation.
Right.
There
but
there
will never be a separate
never.
Toilet
no
seat
way.
In an American bathroom
no
that
way.
Is a standard.
I agree
thing.
With you on yeah. that. Yeah. I'll allow that.
Yeah. But there will be the
– I'll allow
and,
it.
And to be fair, there's a whole female element in the bidets.
Just that it's a French
– efficacy.
Yes.
Yeah. That's different than the poop issue.
Yes, mm-hmm. I do believe. First of all, there is sexual stimulation.
Oh, did not know
when
that.
It comes to the what's going
well,
up
that
there.
That explains a bit.
So I do think that there are probably people who are fearful of their own sexual pleasure to be
well,
derived from that.
And to be fair, I think the American looks at that and goes, "Oh, that's right. The Europeans don't bathe." This
yeah,
is their
right.
idea
this
of
is
a
their
bath.
Way of a. This is their
yeah.
idea of a bath.
Yeah. And,
this
and
is
and
as
so
close as water shooting up from the toilet.
We're a little offended by that
yeah.
because we take baths every day. But again, back to Carolla. Never takes a bath.
Yeah.
Or a shower.
He never takes a shower.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
Now, he does. He's a conscientious objector to soap and water right now.
Mm-hmm.
However, he insists on jumping in a cold pool every day because that's manliness. That's building grit. But it has nothing to do with the water and the washing because he would gladly avoid
he's
that.
He will avoid that. The washing. Mm-hmm. God, why did so, I just shake his hand?
Jeez,
we'll give you a
sorry.
Whole disquisition on why
whole...
soap is evil and we bought into the man's sales BS and we don't need it and we're washing off essential oils and
blah, what do you think?
Blah, blah, blah.
Do you disagree?
Blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I bet there's a happy medium
yes,
for what he's
medium.
Saying.
We probably overdo it here, but who cares?
Right.
I'm happy to do so.
I actually like smelling like rose water.
Yes.
I actually truly enjoy that.
Yes.
And I would argue
love
that
a good soap.
Women have very sensitive sense of smell and we're trying to impress them, and so therefore we will do so.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. That there's does it ever take over the idea, because your own personal pheromones or whatever you sort of release out into the world, that gets
you can't suppress that completely.
Not completely, and I would argue way more is made of that than probably is.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably really anything. But Gary, do you think I was thinking about this morning when I took my cold shower. Why? I mean, Adam would not have any water exposure were it not for the cold, right? Is that about right?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understand the question.
We're talking about the bidet being the way Europeans bathe, and that Adam does not bathe and would not use soap, but probably wouldn't even expose himself to water more than once every week or two.
No, I think he washes his hands every now and then.
But I mean his body.
Yes, no.
It were not him jumping in the pool to get the cold.
Right.
That's all he does that for.
Yeah, that's right.
How does he not get like chlorinated hair and stuff? I was thinking about this morning. Like I did, that was my move when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the pool all the time.
Yeah, clean.
I ended up with very, very green hair that summer.
That's interesting. True.
We'd have to investigate. There's a possibility that he does a quick rinse afterward, but also his hair is not normal hair material. Yeah, it's a Brillo pad.
It is like a bizarre, like impenetrable, almost like a. It's like a Jufro helmet.
Yeah, I don't know if it reacts to chlorine the way a normal human male's would.
It's the color of your hair, interestingly. Would yours?
I don't think it's – my hair has never changed color as a result of it, but I do know what you're talking about with like the funk.
Yeah. If you were to just go to the pool like we used to do in the summertime, like you just go to like the Jewish Community Center pool every day
in the summer.
Yeah, like everybody does.
You know, like everyone.
Went there every day and swam in the pool and just didn't shower for a couple weeks.
I did that at age 11. I did that.
Right, so then your hair
turned
green.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember my mother looking at me going, what the hell?
Like, what? You need to take a shower.
I mean, why? I'm in the pool every day.
Yeah.
Why should I? I'm in the ocean and the pool.
There's chemicals. Water on me. What do you mean?
Chemicals are cleaning me
off.
In
the water the whole day. What's washing going to do? Okay.
Mm-mm.
Anyway. Good times. What else do you guys, anything else coming up for you two? Or
we have,
you're always out. I see you everywhere.
I know. We've got, we just finished a very cool project that is going to be released in probably the next
2 months, maybe
two months through with Audible. That was fascinating. It's a stand-up project. Sort of when we go out on the road and do stand-up, usually the first 5 to 10 minutes of our show, we try and, first of all, we're there for a weekend. We're away from our families, which sucks.
Yeah.
We try and experience as much of the town as we can and write comedy about what they're going through and what
wherever you are.
Yeah, because comedy takes us to places that we would probably not travel to. Some places, some we would.
Like I'd go to Denver, I'd go to Austin, I'd go to Portland, but would I go to Charlotte?
Probably not. Tulsa?
On my own, would I go to these places?
And do comment at that night?
Yeah, we try and write about it and over the course of a weekend try and develop some material about them. Yeah. We thought that would be a cool thing to document. Plane lands on Thursday.
Here's the challenge.
There's a challenge. So you actually hear us going around and you hear – it's basically like two documentaries in one. What it's like to be in those towns right now. What is Tulsa – what is Kansas City grappling with? How has weed changed Denver? You know, have tech bros priced out gay culture in San Francisco? What are they dealing with? And then how does an observation turn into a funny thought, which turns into a joke, which ultimately turns into a bit on stage? And
that's
then
great.
Did we get it right?
The last 10 minutes is our set. And
with Audible, we said, let's make a big sort of audio book, 10 chapters, 10 cities. Mm. Each city is a chapter, and we go around. So
I bet you learned something about comedy.
So much about comedy. Yeah. So much about
the cities.
So much about the cities.
So here's the crazy thing. So we decided to start this thing, and the very first weekend we did was in San Diego, the weekend after Trump got elected.
Oh.
So the next 13 months, which is the most tumultuous year I can remember of our nation's history, when everyone retreated into their bubbles, and God knows I wanted to just stay here in this bubble, we were going to Indiana and Oklahoma and Texas and Missouri and Kansas and Wisconsin. We were hitting the states that were probably purple and red and whatnot.
Yeah, sure.
And so what it is a document of what the whole – so that what everybody was going through during that time, and you hear through our material what it is. So we put together this thing, and then we're going to pull about 6 to 8 minutes of material from each city
and release a comedy
and make a comedy album.
Oh, great.
So the whole thing is called Sklars and Stripes.
Oh, my God, that's great.
It's
what
coming
a great
out,
idea.
Audible, and that'll be out soon. And, of course, this movie, which we're, again, so excited about.
Blinds Galore believes that you deserve high-quality, custom-built blinds and shades, and that is exactly what you will get. We got them. Corolla's got them. Everybody's got them. They are so good. They will walk you through every stage of the process. They are not your average window treatments. Everyone at Blinds Galore is 100% custom. That's right, hand-built from scratch and created for your exact measurements. just for your windows. If you're not happy, they will make sure you are happy with exactly what you get. The team of experts are located in California, down in San Diego, and they cannot wait to help you online or over the phone with anything you need. And I'm telling you, they are responsive. BlindsGalore.com was the first place where you could buy custom window treatments online, and they know their stuff. I've got them, as I said. We love them. I look at them all the time and think, oh, I'm just happy with them. They have over 15 years of experience selling blinds and shades. They have mastered the art. Come on now. You deserve it. Go ahead and do it. Cover up those windows with BlindsGalore.com. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the designer blinds and shades you've always wanted without the designer price tag. Go check out BlindsGalore.com and let them know Dr. Drew sent you. That is BlindsGalore.com. Soothe is an on-demand massage service that lets you experience a relaxing massage in the comfort of your own home, office, or hotel. Wherever you are, they come to you. It's crazy. We've been using them for years, my wife and I. Book right from your phone or on the web, or the Soothe app connects you with one of their hand-selected, highly skilled massage therapists in a little as an hour. I'm telling you, I looked into these guys quite some time ago. That's why you've been using them. They are a high-quality group of therapists. Massage therapists. $25 off your first massage right now if you use the code Drew, D-R-E-W. Now, obviously, it is a stressful time, and we all store that in our body. Well, book your Soothe massage as early as 8 a.m. or as late as midnight. Choose the type of massage you want, the gender of your therapist, the date and time. In as little as 1 hour, a vetted Soothe therapist will arrive with everything you need to relax. It includes the massage table, the music, everything, oil. It's all in one stop, and they come to you. Soothe offers four massage types, including Swedish, deep tissue, sports, and even prenatal. They even offer couples massages, so check that out. It's available in over 55 countries across the U.S., U.K., Canada, and even Australia, so you can relax anytime, even when you're traveling. Soothe now has an exclusive offer to our listeners. As I said, $25 off your first massage if you use the code Drew, D-R-E-W. Download Soothe, S-O-O-T-H-E, and enter the code Drew, and you'll get $25 off your first massage. This is a serious deal. I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. I promise. Soothe, spa quality, massage anytime, anywhere. That's Soothe. How did Poop Talk come into being?
It was cool. Yeah,
our friend Aaron Feldman, who's the director, he came to us and he said, I want to make a movie, a documentary. I want you guys to help me make this movie about poop. And we were like, yeah, probably not. No, thanks.
Initially said no.
And he said, well, why don't you think about it over the weekend and come and tell me what is the type of movie you would want to make on this subject? So we talked about it, and we said, I wonder if we could.
We really did grapple with it that weekend because we went back and forth.
I'd be curious to know what kinds of things came across your
mind.
Well,
we said, number one, that's not necessarily like what we do. People don't think about that when you think about our comedy. And
we said, could we do this the right way? I mean, could we do a good job?
Is this a better documentary handled by somebody else?
Or are you, sir, just going to do a shit project?
Yes! Right!
I'm doing a shitty job.
So, you don't want to do a shitty job on a shit movie.
So we said, we actually talked about it. We said, what would be the movie out of this that we would want to see? So we said, I wonder if we could get our funny friends and smart friends and people who we know have something interesting to say, because we see comedians kind of as like amateur anthropologists.
Well, I was going to say that. Let me sidebar this for a second and just say that that's true. And what I find in good comedians, when they come up with a great thing, it's based on a great observation that is true that people miss.
Yes.
And it rings so vivid and true. And
either miss or they experience and know inherently
the truth of it.
And then it speaks.
I like that because there's a certain amount of surprise in comedy, like aha, that gives you the zing, the reward.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is, oh my God, that's so true. How did I miss that?
That's right.
Totally.
And so with that in mind, we said, how would our funny friends deal with something like this? So we would actually want to have a real honest discussion with them.
And we know they'll be funny.
And so we said, that's a movie we want to do. Came back to him and he said,
I want to make that movie.
Let's make that movie. And so we started contacting all of our friends. We contacted you. We contacted Adam. We contacted all of our comedians that we knew. And everybody said, sure, let's do it. I mean, we were amazed. We thought we'd get like 50% of the people be like, nah. 98% of the people that could do it.
As I remember the experience, you made it very easy, too, by the way.
Yeah.
That was really made it go, I think.
I think so, too. We wanted to conduct the interviews. We've known you for a while.
Yeah. So for us to sit down and talk to you about something, it was very much a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what comes off on screen is
how comfortable you were.
Yeah.
You look comfortable and great. And like it's like you're just having a very normal conversation. Yeah. It felt that way throughout the whole film. And I think that's why it works. People were willing to be vulnerable and talk about it.
So then when we finished it, we thought, okay, this is going to, I mean, we didn't do it for much money. We thought, all right, this is not going to be anything. It'll be what it is, and it probably won't even make a splash. And or people won't even want to pick it up and move it forward. But then it got picked up. It's so funny because the person at Preferred Entertainment, which did Jiro Dreams of Sushi and Arrival and all these other great movies, he watched the movie and he said, I love it, but I can't walk down my hallway to my in my office and tell people we're gonna do a movie about poop. It just seems so – I don't think I could do it. He goes back to his family that night and he sits down to dinner and they're talking about what did you look at today, what did you see? And he's like, I saw this interesting movie about poop.
The whole family started talking.
The rest of the conversation, it opened up to this thing and he thought, okay, this might be a movie where people just – it gets people talking. So he picked it back up and then WME and then here, then Comedy Dynamics and then suddenly now it's in theaters. This is something we did not
expect.
Well,
the theatrical lease is crazy. That's crazy.
10 cities in one theater. I mean, here it's in like the Lemley Santa Monica in LA and New York. It's in the Village East. Cool, like in
Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City.
Some great cities, but kind of all over the country in these like cool theaters. And I would say this. If I were at a movie in an independent movie theater and I saw a trailer for this movie with all the people that are in it, Kumail Nanjiani, Pete Holmes, like
you,
Nicole Byer, you, Adam, like all these great people, I probably would want to see what this movie was all about. Yeah. Plus, it's a universal subject that everybody does.
And it seemed like everybody, all the comedians were people that been, lack of a better word, hot for the last like 2 years.
Yes.
Like, you got like people that are on people's minds recently.
Well, we shot with Kumail pre the big sick and then boom, explosion. And so for me, for people who didn't know Kumail before and now know him through his movie, he is speaking very honestly about his own sort of grappling with, there was a moment, and he talks about it in the movie, where he did not want to shit when he was a kid, and he would thought he if he only ate a certain amount of food, it was like a Pakistani eating disorder. Whatever, if I could eat just one less grape.
You should know there's a whole obsessive compulsive disorder component or theory about that.
Yeah,
holding your shit.
Yeah, only eating the amount that you feel like your body.
And there's a theory, it's like analytic theory that kids get upset because they feel like they're losing a part of themselves.
Yeah,
they're losing a piece down the toilet.
I mean, there's that aspiration. You know, again. I wonder what is the psychology of, is there a feeling of like, this is part of my own death, that part of me is leaving me?
Yeah, that children will wave at it sometimes as it goes by as though it's something they, and I guess part of self is equivalent to grief, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Here's what's amazing. The truth of the matter is, and we talked about this with you, if you're pooping, it
your
means
body's
your body
working.
Is working. Yeah. I actually just studied with my daughter. She had a science test this morning, my 10-year-old daughter. It was everything. It was like, how does food, what, you know, literally it started with
amylase,
what do
the
cells do? Like, exactly. Yeah, the food, it goes into the mouth, the teeth crunch it down, then it turns into the wet saliva, it goes through the esophagus, and it goes down. Then the nutrients get out, they go to the cell, they go through the small intestine wall, and then what's left is this kind of wet mass of a thing. The water gets removed, and then it's solid waste, and then it goes through the – I was like, that is as scientific as it gets. They say you eliminate it. There's the elimination of it. It's very – and to me, listening, watching, kind of helping her study for this test and going through all these terms, I'm like, yeah, the body is a fascinating thing in that it can can do all of those things with every little
without
piece
you
of
even
food
thinking.
But what the complex part is, what happens at every little columnar cell in the small bowel and how – different nutrients get through in different ways and what happens to them.
How does it determine, okay, this is something I need?
Insanely complicated.
Yeah, and make the differentiation between each one.
It's not thinking.
No,
it's all osmotic gradients and these active transport mechanisms.
But a decision has to be made.
Our system is in place.
There are energetics, like flows of energy, thermodynamics, right?
Right.
Energy states flowing.
But isn't that just, to me, is mind-blowing in the chemistry of it, or at least where it's like, it's almost you feel like there's a doorway and it
there's
okay,
some of it's a
you
tube,
go this way and you go this way.
Some of it's that. Some of it's little things that come out and grab it and bring it in. Some of it is, it depends on what it's going after.
It is fascinating. And so whenever you do poop, whenever you do exactly, it comes out the way it should. Mm-hmm. There's no blood in it.
What I find bizarre is how people are so preoccupied with the colon.
Right.
Which job is to just pull the water out of that wet matter.
That's all it does
to
make it
solid.
Pull
the water out. That's right. And people are like, that's where I got to have an enema and I got to get it out of there. And I have sludge. You have nothing. You have what you're supposed to have.
Your body's doing
it. Perfect instrument.
The small intestine, to me, is a little bit more fascinating.
It's way more complicated.
What it can do.
Way more complicated.
Way more complicated. Yeah. Again, this is what I learned from studying with my daughter this morning on her stupid science test.
And different parts of it do different things.
Oh, yes.
Move through, so.
I mean, you're talking to our father, who sadly is no longer with us, died of colon cancer. And
hey, you've got the bad Ashkenazi Jews.
That's right.
That I've
he
got.
Just had his.
I just got a colonoscopy.
But you should
good.
Get the genetic testing done, which a patient of mine is a geneticist, and she recommended this thing called Color.com, and it's $250. Yeah. And if one of you should do it,
yeah,
and then if you're positive. They'll do first-degree relatives for $50.
Oh, that's nice.
So there you go.
And I'm going to do it. You give me the information.
It does the 30 most common cancer-causing genes. Turns out I have what's called MSH6, so I have to get colonoscopies and arthroscopies every year.
Oh, my God. I thought Trump was trying to get rid of MSH6.
That's
513. All right, whatever.
So should you get a Lynch syndrome or BRCA or something, let me know.
We will.
We'll share our misery. Maybe we'll all go in together. I just set up Adam's colonoscopy. I just set it up.
You know what? I kind of like my colonoscopy, and I will tell you that I had and I talked about this before.
What's
I had
wrong with you?
I did one 5-6 years ago, as soon as our father had passed away, and you had to drink all that.
They have a better way now.
They have a better way now. I was like, as I was doing it, I'm like, I hope to God the next time I do this, there's a better way than just literally
purging yourself.
Terrible liquid.
Well, you're drinking like ocean. It's like seawater taking gigantic gulps of it.
Yeah. And I was specifically drinking from a conch shell. That was weird.
That was a bad call.
Bizarre. But yes, now it's different. It's a much lower deal. You drink actual water after you take some stuff and you don't like.
That's right.
Michael Jackson's milk, if you can get that, it's pretty good.
What's Michael Jackson's milk?
Propofol.
I thought you had to just for a while lay
before
down next to Corey Feldman.
I had Versed and fentanyl, and I felt like hell afterwards. I had propofol last time.
Fentanyl
is what they gave my wife when she was giving birth.
Well, it is fascinating, and I will say that after doing this movie and making the movie, I am more open to talking about it, and I feel like I've become a little more open with
what
my
was
habits.
Crazy is
really
yes said, I am not joking. I
open with your habits.
Yes, I have been more open to. I was more of a private pooper. I would shit in my son's bathroom. Which has now led him to shit in our bathroom, which is kind of like, I guess, like retribution.
Bathroom musical chairs, yeah.
So you're like some sort of weird cat shitter.
Yeah, I don't want to do this. I don't want to wreck my bathroom that I share with my wife. And so, but since that.
We're learning a little other things here about
exactly.
The power of his work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I said.
Ruin your wife's bathroom.
Right, but I was like, you know what? This is natural, and maybe I'm being hard on myself, and maybe it's, you know, the smell goes away, and I just should be more open about it.
And by the way, with all that colon cancer stuff, you should be taking prebiotics and bulk and all that kind of stuff too.
I should take
some Metamucil or some sort of psyllium husk or something.
Yes.
There's all kinds of good stuff you can take.
You should be taking all of that stuff.
You too.
But you do.
You
well,
too.
I
you
say
mean,
we should be taking
Bono and the Edge should be
but,
taking.
Yeah,
some.
but the idea that
well, the
like
people with the family history of colon cancer.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know
yes,
when,
yes.
But we sat down and you talked to like you know Pete Holmes has been a friend of ours for 20 years and we sat down and talked to him and he's like, yeah, I make a great shit and I asked my wife to come over and look at it.
Oh, that is a classic male move.
Okay.
Did you see the South Park where Randy takes the gigantic oh my God, now you have to see this.
Now I have to see it. No,
because he's literally like, and you go, oh my God, wait, Sharon, come here.
So he shares it
come
with
take
her.
A look at the turd of the
and
century.
He, and by the way, these guys have a meditation room upstairs in their house.
These are evolved people.
They're very evolved people. To me, it doesn't feel very caveman. It felt like a very evolved thing. And I was like, wow, you guys have that sort of a relationship where you invite her to look at your shit and that's something I never knew about him, and it took sitting down and interviewing for this.
Is she a comedian too?
No. But it took sitting down and interviewing him for this movie to get that piece
of I don't think I could
advice.
Have lived through my life had I not learned that. That made my life meaningful now, to
thank
know
you.
That he you're shows welcome. His shit to his wife.
I mean, every once in a while.
Every once in a while, if it's a good one. Not every time. You know what?
I will say that I now, if I have a great shit and it feels really like good and it was like aced it, walked out of the bathroom, I will share that information.
What's extra super bizarre about this conversation right now is that I strangely have developed a preoccupation. No shit. With the TV show Schitt's Creek.
Oh my God!
Great
I
show.
Love that show. It's Eugene Levy.
I know. My wife and I watched.
His son is really good on there, too.
Unbelievable.
So funny.
So funny.
I mean, Chris Elliott's like, so good.
Acting, and all of them, and the daughter, the one who plays the daughter.
Great. So good.
And Eugene Levy's daughter is Twyla.
What the hell? Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Famous and talented family.
Because and we it doesn't always go that way. Episodes in 3 days. I kid you not.
That's awesome.
It's a weird preoccupation. And strangely, it's about shit.
Shit's in the air.
Mayor shit at Schitt's Creek.
It's in the air.
It's a sign for this movie.
I'm telling you, this is coming out on President's Day weekend.
What better way to honor our current president than to watch him?
February 16th. Oh.
Right?
Huh?
Yeah.
Right?
Too bad he can't go on Howard Stern anymore because you know he could talk about that.
I'm sure he's taking some shit that he makes everyone look at. Yeah. Everyone. He makes
everyone in his cabinet look at it and stand up and clap for it.
Yeah. He's not clapping. It's like the scene from Blazing Saddles. I didn't get a rump out of that guy.
Give the governor a rump. Are we really? Is that the guy?
That's what we've come to.
Didn't Lyndon Johnson, isn't he famous for having held cabinet meetings while he took a shit?
Oh, my God.
No, yeah. I'm not kidding.
I believe you. I don't know that. That's fantastic.
That to me feels like a Texas person.
Yeah. Door open.
And eating something else while
Gary,
he's going.
Can you check that out for me? I don't want that.
Thumbs up on that. That's true.
Yeah, I didn't want to be apocryphal.
But I was imagining he's like eating like Texas toast while he's taking a shit. Like just nonstop. Have you ever eaten anything while you're taking a shit? No.
Sure.
Eat while you've taken a shit?
I'm sure.
Yeah. So for me.
What is Texas toast?
Texas toast is like a big, thick, kind of brioche style piece of toast.
Just like slathered in butter while he's taking a dump.
You were eating and shitting?
No, not eating and shitting, but like to that end, I was also, for some reason, I didn't love like pooping in public or whatnot. My kids opened me up a little bit. This movie opened me up so much more because we did this movie. Then I went on a river rafting trip where like you have to.
There's a thing called,
we were with five other families. There's a thing called the Groover, which is basically a bucket. And they put
Groover.
A little.
The Groover.
The Groover. You put a little. You put a little.
Yeah.
Put a little tent around it, but it's wide open, and you're just looking out at it.
Oh,
and
God,
I will say some of my favorite moments on that trip was just sitting in the Groover and just after I had a nice big cup of coffee,
listening to the creek, the water, the river,
the Snake River go by while I made my own snake. It was wonderful.
Look, that is coffee's second gift. Really?
Yeah.
Well, it tastes good, and then it cleans you out.
It used to be recommended by physicians as a laxative.
Coffee.
Yeah.
I'm sure now everybody says don't do it, but.
Don't drink what?
Coffee. Don't drink coffee as a laxative, but is it?
It is a laxative. I mean, it just happens to be.
To me, it's like every morning is like the last 15 minutes of the TV show Hoarders. I'm just like, get it all out.
Well,
let's get it out.
There's something called the gastrocolic reflex.
Right.
Which is when you put something warm in your stomach, it causes what's called a mass movement with the things to move down into the ampulla. Now you guys are getting deep
into
this.
There we go. This is so deep in it.
So,
Didn't we talk about like the poop transplants with you?
No, we did not. Well, maybe we did.
We talked about it in the movie, but like where have we gone from
it's
there?
It's become standard care.
Standard care.
Yeah, yeah.
Explain it again. I will take
your poop out and exchange it with the poop of this gentleman over here.
It's the bacteria in your poop, and it's in a pill.
It's not like you're taking a log and replacing it.
Like a silly putty, rolling it up and jamming it into.
So it's in pill form, but it's other bacteria from other poop that somehow
colonize, and it works. It's for C. difficile, Clostridium difficile overgrowth.
What was the moment at which that worked? You know what I mean? Like, who was like, I have an idea. Let's get someone else's shit and put it in your ass.
The Clostridium has been getting so resistant and people have been getting so desperate. I could see where that would occur pretty easily to somebody. Like, how are we going to get let's get some real bacteria back in that gut.
Right.
Right.
And we could probably package it in a something. And I'm sure they weren't even thinking about the poo part. It was just the bacteria.
It's just all about
the bacteria. You put it in a pill. Yeah. I mean, I know people who, if they said, you're going to eat the placenta of your child, you would say, no way. Try this pill over here.
Right, right.
I'm not going to tell you what's in it.
Right.
So you're fine with it.
So again, you mentioned.
There's another movie in that, I think.
Oh,
not just the placenta thing, but the idea of we'd take a pill with anything.
Anything. I mean, okay. So
you mentioned the opioid. Think about this. You made the opioid crisis at the beginning.
Okay.
Okay. And you know, we do a sports podcast and we talk deeply about the issue, certainly in the NFL, about players taking opioids for pain and whatnot, hydrocodone. If
they made, and there are some athletes, because they live in towns like in Colorado where mm-hmm. you can smoke weed, mm-hmm. and a lot of them say that is better for my pain.
Good.
I actually feel better.
Yes.
Take it.
When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. A lot of times that is not the case. People configure cars online only later to find out they are not available. Not with TrueCar. Of course, I'm talking about TrueCar. You get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Yeah, you know, and we talk about it all the time. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Next, TrueCar, TrueCar.com or TrueCar app will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 3,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers are available nationwide. You will get to work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer that you make contact with, and TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster, better buying experience when they contact a TrueCar Certified Dealer. And on average, you can expect to save over $3,000 off MSRP. Once you register, you'll see a real price on actual inventory. Hook up with that TrueCar certified dealer. Have a better buying experience. TrueCar, go to the TrueCar.com or TrueCar app. Do what I'm telling you.
I want to tell you about Health IQ. They use science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for the health-conscious people. It includes runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Health IQ can help save our customers up to 33% because, of course, physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. They maintain their weight more appropriately in a more appropriate range, and they are, of course, training their cardiovascular system. This is from a study done by Warburton et al. In 2006. It's like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, right? Makes sense. Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. All you got to do is go to HealthIQ, HEALTHIQ.com/Drew. Makes perfect sense. It's an insurance company that helps the health-conscious people like yourself, runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegans, vegetarians, helps you guys get lower rates on your life insurance. All you got to do is go to healthiq.com/Drew. Check it out. See if you qualify. What do you got to lose?
What if you made pills look exactly like Vicodin, and you stuck them in pill bottles that looked exactly like the Vicodin pill bottles, but they were made of THC or whatever, whatever you would need. And you said, and doctors prescribed that to NFL players and said, take this for your pain.
Yeah.
I believe that to a person, they would all say, fine, because it looks like all the other medicine I take. Do you know what I'm saying?
Psychologically. Well, first of all, ethically, we can't do that, number one.
Unless you tell them what it is, but I'm just saying
And it might have some added bang because they are so attuned, conditioned to the opioid, but it is different.
It is different.
And some people have no effect on it.
Some people have good
pain control. Some people have – cannabis is a weird drug in that affects your genetic very much alters how it affects you.
So,
all over the map in terms of whether you like it, whether it makes you high, whether it makes you anxious, whether it gives you good pain control. Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated thing. But for those that are prone to a good effect, I think you'd enhance the good effect by doing that, particularly like the opiates.
And have less of a addictive sort of track.
Different addictive element, different quality to it. And for the record, much rather have somebody taking cannabis than opiate. Much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whether they get addicted to it or not, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'd much rather than taking the cannabis than the opiate.
Is there a difference in like the effects or the benefits as to if it's smoked or ingested?
In terms of pain?
Yeah.
You're getting much higher levels when you ingest it.
When you eat it.
And right. It's harder to control and stuff too. So most people like smoking because they can adjust it better.
Yeah.
And opioids, if we're going back to pooping, I mean, that'll stop you the hell up forever.
Oh,
I mean, that's the worst.
Listen, have you seen all the TV commercials for how to deal with the opioid-induced bowel constipation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So great. Now we got medicine.
Now we built a whole other industry
Come on. Don't even like go there. I'm on my website, I'm writing a ultimate opiate saga. Stuff taking how the poppy got used back in prehistoric
era, old days.
And I'm taking it all the way to how do we get in this mess today. And I witnessed it happen. I know exactly how it happened, and people don't understand it.
Worse now than 20 years ago when we were –
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we're the adult, the teenagers aren't still with it. Teenagers have stopped. It just stopped outright. And they were where the new
Why
ones were coming from. Because they're looking at everybody dying and they got the message.
Really?
Teenagers are – oh, yeah, yeah.
They're just smarter. Yeah. They're just
got the message. They got this will kill you. It's killing everybody. Killing their aunts and uncles and blah, blah, blah. I will not do that.
Wow.
So they're not doing that. And the crazy thing is that our biggest previous opiate epidemic was in the 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
It had something to do with the Civil War. Exactly what – now that I researched a little bit, it's not –
It was not Industrial Revolution based?
No, well, what happened was – no, it's a little complicated. So morphine sulfate came along, okay, and that was sort of during the Civil War, and they were using it liberally during the Civil War.
So people get injured, they get a morphine drip?
No. There was no IV.
Not even that.
They just invented the hypodermic needle during the Civil War. But they didn't have any. They didn't have any of the syringes. They didn't have any of the stuff. They didn't have any way of dissolving it. So they were using it sort of powders and orally and all kinds of funky ways. And laudanum had been around for a while, which is sort of an opium-like product. They're using a lot of that. But they didn't have much of it. They didn't have a lot of it. So they didn't get a lot of addiction. After the Civil War, all the ladies who lost husbands, it looks like that's where it really broke out.
Really?
Mm-mm. It got going in the and all the trauma from the war as people started using it for this and that. And that's the addiction took up. Then when the doctors who were creating the addiction took a good look at it, they went, oh, shit. Well, first of all, it was working pretty well for alcoholics. We turned – because alcoholics are really objectionable. Now they're all morphine addicts. They turned all their alcoholics into morphine
addicts.
Because they were more easy – they were nicer than when they were on alcohol. So
they
were treating alcoholics with morphine. Then they started treating morphine with amphetamines. And
to get them uppers.
No. They thought they just string – what we're doing today, we're doing the same effing thing, which is we just move from one to the next. So the cannabis is kind of the same thing, but at least a weaker version of it.
You're kind of trying to land it a little
bit. Right. But this is something medicine has always done. It's this fantasy that we can treat addiction with another drug.
Another addiction.
And end up addicting them to something. Anyway, this was going on in the 1890s. The Kerosene Narcotic Act kicked in because – doctors were screwing it up so badly, the government had to get involved with it.
Oh my God.
And finally, you can find these documentations, these papers of people, doctors saying, well, this is bad. Doctors have created this. This is really our problem. But we better just make sure we don't get any more of these. Let's not do this anymore. Wink, wink. We'll see how the rest of them make do by themselves. You know, they just let them all die.
Oh my God.
They just let I believe we are doing something similar now.
Just letting people
– We're not properly treating them. We're not properly treating them. So.
Saying, okay, let's move on is essentially what they're saying. Like we can't fix this
round.
Let's
just make sure we don't get any more addicts.
Right.
Wink, wink. You know, let's just make sure we don't create any more of this.
Wow.
And we'll struggle along with the ones we got. We don't really
– Is there a way – I mean how do people get themselves out of it? That's just my question.
They don't themselves. They need other people.
You need other people.
They need to be
help.
Away for a long time. It takes a long – there's many different ways right now. There's all kinds of ideas and all kinds of – things. I'm interested in people being restored to full flourishing life. Maybe even better than before they got addicted,
right.
Which is what recovery looks like sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is abstinence-based.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in methadone and Suboxone, though they're fine to detox people for a few days if somebody wants to do that. I have no objection. Mm-hmm. But those replacement therapies, unless it's somebody who's failed and is unwilling to do anything else mm-hmm. – then and your goal should still be to get to abstinence.
Eventually. To a place
and when you do, you got to work hard. It's a lot of work for a long time.
We have relatives. My wife's got relatives that were in, you know, said they're in recovery, but also in recovery for alcohol, but then taking head operations and whatever. And you're like, it's not a full thing.
It's just going to go. It's going to go bad.
Or it'll go into something else. It's going into something else.
That's not a recovery because that's not being honest. And
it's a whole thing.
Hey, good times. My people.
Yeah, good times.
Good times.
They're so funny.
Dude, such a great, again, I can't thank you enough for being in this movie.
It's my pleasure. I know you're going to the premiere for it, like right now.
We're
going to
do a screening
or whatever.
Screening tonight.
If people are fans of yours and what you do on this show, they'll love this movie. I think they're just going to laugh and enjoy
it. There's something familiar about this film for now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Aside from the fact that there's people that they'll recognize and been excited about for the last couple of years.
Right.
There's something very like now about this film. That's what I took away.
Too.
And that's why it's getting all this reach. Can I see it on like Netflix or Hulu or something? Or what do I do?
I'm thinking about – first of all, you can get it video on demand if it's not in your city.
I don't even know what that means.
VOD means if whatever cable company, DirecTV and whatever you have.
So it'll show up on the
– If you go on to your demand thing and type in Poop Talk.
Okay.
You can see it on iTunes. You can go to iTunes.
Does Amazon have it on demand?
I think they will. I think
that's
they
where
will.
I get all my demand stuff.
Yeah, they may be able to do it now. I think there's a window for it to be released, and then it will probably be on Amazon. Okay. And but it might be on Amazon right away. All I know is it's on iTunes. That's one thing. So you can get it on iTunes.
If you're not one of the 10 cities, or if you're one of the 10 cities, go to the theater.
Go to the theater and see it. See with other people.
I will say it's what's cool about it, having seen it in theaters, it's fun to watch a whole theater of people laugh a bunch of times.
Well, I was going to say, I was hoping you had seen it to know that what that must be very satisfying.
So once, in New York at the Long Island Film – or the Lower East Side Film Festival, you know, as we are quickly becoming a society of people who are just on their phones and very individually doing things, as comedians, we love going into a town and doing a set of comedy. To hear a whole room laugh –
it's a big deal.
Feels like a bit of a dying
like a communal experience.
It's a communal experience where everyone's experience. That's why it's fun to see live music, and it's fun to kind of, you know, but a live music, a lot of times people are on their phones. It's such a weird thing. Laughter requires attention and everybody doing something at the same time. There is that communal experience. Going to see a movie in a movie theater, same deal. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it when everybody – horror movies and comedy are the best because their reactions are so visceral. You're laughing. You're jumping out of your seat. Yes. Both things are amazing.
We do need to share more as human beings.
Agreed.
That's a general note. And so why not – around poop and around comedy.
Yeah.
One quick comedy story about Corolla and observations in cities. We were in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. When I didn't know he did what you're talking about, but I'm seeing now he just does these observations like you're talking about and tries to make stories out of it. Mm-hmm. We were in Salt Lake City. They have like big, huge, beautiful boulevards. You look like you'd eat off them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on each side with a crosswalk, there's a flag. You can pick up the flag as a pedestrian and hold it over your head and walk to the other side and put the flag in a little box on the other side, a little
like capture PVC the flag. Pipe.
Well, what Corolla was like, they're there. How long are they there? They stay there?
Yeah.
He goes, Los Angeles, in 7 minutes, that'd be a shiv. It'd be, they'd shave off the end and boom, that'd be the end.
Someone would write Lakers on it and stick it in their car.
Who wrote Little Puppet on this flag?
Uh-huh, exactly.
All right, I know you guys got to go. I'm dragging this out, but this is it. Let's see you at Sklarblaz, S-K-L-A-R is the Twitter, supersklars.com for screening info. Yeah. Is that the only website? Is there
that's
another website?
The website, and follow us on Instagram. We're at Sklar Brothers.
Television
as well.
Coming out we should look for?
TV stuff coming up.
We have a new stand-up special. We're not sure exactly where it's going to come out. We'll know in like two weeks.
Is
that the one connected to?
No, it's a different one. One that we shot last year, and we're waiting to see where it's going to land.
Oh, guys,
and so
this is
going to
be good. This is going to be a nice, fun 6 months for you guys.
Good run for us.
Yeah, good for you. All right,
thank you.
See you soon. I'll see you all next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.